Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let the lies be line with a death wish. Be right, didn't have no name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Bad night for the Rockets. I don't know how else to put it. While we, as a show, take very few things seriously, we talked about that matchup last night as one the Rockets should and must, is probably too strong, but they should have won that game and should have won it pretty easily, considering who was available for them and who wasn't available for the Warriors. But historically, that team has tortured the Rockets franchise, even in that building. And we'll hear from Steve Kerr reliving some of the moments where the Warriors have come out on top, and that was just another one of them as the Warriors take it 115-113. Unless you are one of the people who is leading the Ime out narrative, last night was bad for the Rockets. It's one night, and the opponent certainly highlights it. You get Portland tonight, so you can get right back to winning basketball games, but all the things you can pick at regarding the team showed up. They're not great in the clutch. They're now two games below 500 in clutch games. Awful in overtime. I think that loss took them to 1-6. And you had moments from everybody that contributed for the most part. Maybe Reed Shepard's the one exempt person. He had a big night shooting the basketball. But Kevin Durant misses a couple big free throws. Alperen Şengün did have a run late in the fourth quarter to get them back in it. But overall, he wasn't very efficient. That inefficiency returned in overtime. Jabari Smith in his return is on the wrong side of data dredging. A lot of stats get grabbed to highlight the uniqueness of a night. Reed Shepard, 30 points off the bench, no free throws. That was a stat that was grabbed. He's had a couple of those this week. And in his run overall the last 2 weeks, where you go, hey, first player or the third player in Rocket history to do that. Jabari Smith, the first player in NBA history to play 40-plus minutes, attempt eight field goals and not make any of them, and then have, the five turnovers that he had. It all came together into what was a night of the Rockets playing poorly, not taking a lead until the end of the third quarter. I think they went up 81-80, and then you see, or at least hear from Prime, this is the first lead all night for the Rockets. You're like, yeah, it kind of felt that way. Maybe you're not locked in on that as you're watching the game, but it felt like they had been behind all night. The Warriors would keep them at a distance, particularly in that third quarter, until the Rockets made a run, thanks to Reed Shepard shooting. But at the end of the day, the seams that you can see as this team has been put together and what could haunt them in a playoff series against a locked-in opponent, all that came to the forefront in their loss to the Warriors. It just so happens that you were not playing a playoff-level team. You're just playing a team who owned you. It's been decades long. Like, for Astro fans, we have this thing with the Yankees. Yankee fans know what Rocket fans feel like facing facing the Warriors. The Yankee fans know all too well what it feels like going against a team who stands in your way from what you want to accomplish. Excuse me, and that team continues to not allow you to because they beat you. This was far less stakes compared to the past, but when it came down to it, it was Warriors Rockets in Toyota Center, and the Warriors won. Generally, like they always do. They generally always do in games that matter, and now in a game that didn't matter. As far as the disparity of the rosters last night, we talked about it going into it because Brandon Podziemski was the star attraction, according to ESPN, when they were lining up the stats for who you should be focused on. He was the one to watch. But there is a Twitter account that is called Money on the Floor, and all they simply do is tell you, depending on the matchup, they don't go through the entire league schedule night by night, but they'll pick a couple matchups and tell you the difference between active salary for one team and active salary for the other. There was a nearly $99 million difference in active salary last night in favor of the Rockets. Of course, no Steph, no Jimmy Butler, no Seth Curry. He was in the building but didn't play. And Porzingis out as well. Draymond Green, the highest paid player for the Warriors who played. We know Fred is out for the Rockets, Steven Adams, but you still had Durant at $50-plus million and Alfie at over $33. $142 million of active salary for the Rockets, 43.3 for the Warriors. It did not feel like that at any point. Al Horford is making miracle passes to get it to the perimeter, which eventually winds up with a three-pointer for Al Horford. He made plays. Yes, that Al Horford was once a highly paid player, not so much anymore. He was one of the late in the offseason acquisitions for the Warriors. Warriors, as they were trying to build a team they thought could be old, very old, and still win a title. Those dreams are dead, but it was vintage Warriors against the Rockets. And this team, the Rockets, is still battling, and they will continue to battle for a three seed. But if you have concerns about what they could be as far as a real contender, there it is for you. All laid out for you against a team who had no business competing with them last night, except that they were wearing those Warrior uniforms. And let's hear from the coach of that Warriors team. Steve Kerr's had a lot of good nights in Houston, and he was asked a question about it and relayed some of the good times that they've had here.
Yeah, this is a good building for us. We've won some playoff series here, and a lot of good memories in that locker room. It's interesting. I mean, we've won playoff games over the years here in series. We won game seven here. You win a game like tonight, it feels the same. You know, you're just trying to win, and winning is just an amazing feeling. And even though this is a regular season game, just to see a bunch of young guys compete and come out with a win, it feels like a playoff win. It really does. You know, it's the beauty of competing and playing in the NBA, coaching in the NBA, is you get nights like tonight where everything's worth it.
Former Rocket DeAnthony Melton had some big moments. He almost gave the Rockets the victory with his inability to handle Amen Thompson's ball pressure. I think the Rockets had just had an empty possession. The Warriors were up five, and Amen got after DeAnthony Melton near midcourt, forced a steal, got fouled, made one free throw, missed the second, wound up back in the hands of Kevin Durant after the offensive rebound. He knocks down a three, and then later in the game, the Rockets were down three. Melton fouls Kevin Durant, and that was one of the instances when Kevin Durant missed a big free throw. So Melton gave the Rockets a chance. It looked really dire. Down five, Warriors with the ball. You weren't getting stops. And he almost gave you that win. Of course, he did respond with a big offensive rebound and put back to give the Warriors a three-point lead. And, of course, Kevin Durant, when he needed to miss a free throw, banked in one. It was just not a great night down the stretch for your closer. And the Alperen-Shin Goon experience is an interesting one, particularly last night. I mentioned he had a couple big buckets, I think. He also is someone, it's plain to see, if he cannot overwhelm you with his strength, there's not a lot of counters right now for him against guys who can hold up against him in the paint. There are a couple instances where, if you know the move, you know the move, where he'll try to wrap his elbow around your rib to get you out of the way, and off balance, he'll throw up a hook. If there isn't someone in the paint strong enough to deal with that, then it's just, let me flip this ball up and hope it goes in. There's not a lot of counters right now for him against actual competent bigs down there. Whether that comes later in his career, that's going to be something he needs to figure out, considering he's not in a world of very athletic men. He's not profiled as one of the most athletic. He is, at this point, kind of floor bound. There are moments, I know he'll dunk on a guy when he's got a full head of steam down the lane, but when it comes to lift on that hook and other moves, it's not really there. So he's going to have to do it with strength, and sometimes he's just not going to be stronger than the guy he's going against, particularly when old-ass Al Horford is standing in the paint.
Yeah, Al Horford, one night he could.
Yeah, and he did it.
He could, because he's like you said, big enough. I think that's like the most underrated thing with Shingun, is that like he's not a 7-footer. Like he's like a 6'9" kind of guy. So it's like the guys with long arms too, if they're not string beans like Wimby, where like Wimby, that's why he's so good against Wimby, is that, or you know, so good.
He can win some battles.
Considering he's Wimbenyama,
yeah,
is that he can just knock him on his butt a couple times and get, you know, get him under the basket and then flip a shot up, where someone like Horford, who's like taller and won't get pushed around, yeah, it's all like, you know, hope for some spin move footwork stuff. And if that's not there, because Horford and Draymond are like the two best at staying on their feet, or yeah, staying on their feet and not jumping the air, yeah, it's just like so hard for him to get a shot. And he doesn't really do as much off the dribble stuff lately as he did, you know, at the start of the season, where,
yeah,
you know, that the Orlando game in Houston, where he just like the last play of the game was just take Wendell Carter off the bounce and work your way into the paint.
We watched him very early in the year, first game of the year against OKC. His face-up game was more prominent. Now he's almost exclusively a back-to-the-basket guy.
Yeah, and he like will start the back down at the three-point line now.
Yeah, it is a – there used to be the Charles Barkley thing rule where you had a certain amount of time. I don't know if they've just wiped that out so he can kind of do that now. It is – look, it's part of the non-aesthetically pleasing version of the Rockets offense, where he's part of it. The ISO stuff from Kevin Durant. Look, great player. Missed free throws, whatever. It has happened to him in this season. It'll probably happen again. But it is just a reminder that age gets to everyone, where they can throw a big on him and he can't blow by him. Like, sure, there's help defense, but there are times last night where, you know, guys you don't expect to stay in front of him or have never heard of before have been able to stay in front of Kevin Durant, because still a great scorer, but he's not really blowing by guys off the dribble anymore. It's just not part of his game. That's why guys like Malevi Leons, or however you say his name, can be on him for a couple minutes. And even guys like Quentin Post and Gui Santos, those are guys, particularly Gui Santos, who was matched up against them. And, of course, Kevin Durant's going to have his moments. He's Kevin Durant. But the other times, Santos is more of a wing at 6'7". But even just because of how the matchups go, you will see Quentin Post on him. And it isn't as easy as you would think now.
No.
He's just an older player. That first step isn't where it once was. It's just tough when the closer, the guy who's supposed to be your guy, has the moments he had last night.
And then they can throw, you know, in
and
the
closing.
And then
they'll throw Draymond on you to close it out.
Yeah, they can throw Draymond on.
And he's still, speaking of age, despite the age,
yeah,
when he needs to, when he's motivated by the guy on the other side, and I don't know anyone else who motivates him more or would motivate him more than Kevin Durant, he can still get after you.
Yeah. I mean, he had a moment where Shingun had the ball in the low post, and cutting down was Amin Thompson. And Draymond, like, went from Shingun and then just kind of met him in at the rim and didn't block him, but like just affected the shot enough to where it was a miss. And you're just like, yeah, like he can still guard two guys in the paint like that and recover to one of the most athletic players in the league and play good defense. And he's strong enough to where, you know, he gets hit in the chest by him in and like doesn't go flying out. Like he can still, again, he can still do it at a high level. It's just they don't have Curry and Jimmy. So, you know, the high level, you know, the top end of what they can do in the playoffs is pretty limited. But like Draymond can still, he can still hang when the game means something.
Yeah, and it clearly meant something to them last night. And a part of it has to do with how the game, oh, we're still in this. Oh, yeah. We got a chance to win this one. Let's go. And that was the what happened or the scenario last night.
The first quarter where, I mean, they gave the Rockets gave 30 points to this Warriors team in the first quarter was like a sign
of things to come.
Yeah, we can get something going. And honestly, granted to Steve Kerr, his offense still generating,
it
like
still generates good shots,
like open cutters and stuff. Like what at this point, 12 years into his tenure. 13 years into his tenure?
What did he get? Yeah, right.
It was 14-50.
Yeah.
So it's like this far. And I know, like, whatever. Amin Thompson hasn't been playing against it for 11 years, but, like, just, it's just still like, oh, you can just have Przemyski cut to the basket and get a layup. Okay. That just will happen. You know, that's, you can get all numbers estimate, like 50 points of just, like, system buckets. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Even with the lack of talent, it still works, and it's a unique system that not a lot of NBA teams get to see night to night. So in a regular season game, it certainly can work, and it did last night, unfortunately. What I don't appreciate, and we played the clip, Steve Kerr talking about Toyota Center like a vacation home. Like we've had nice moments here. We enjoy the rooms we stay in. Yeah, it's like, hey, we get away from home, and it's like me and Steph and Draymond, we come here, and it's like the good old days. And Toyota Center is like a place of joy. It reminds them of the good times.
Yeah, no,
that's not a spot you want to be in for the Rockets.
And I feel like they say it, like they've said it the last like four times.
Yeah,
they've won like a semi-meaningful game.
Yeah,
they
won a game seven here.
No, yeah, and they said after the game seven, they said it after last night. There was the Ime's first year when they were 41-41. And the Rockets were making like a play-in kind of push. And they had won like their 11 straight games or whatever it was. And they play the Warriors, and the Warriors come in. Of course, they beat the Rockets. And I forgot if it was Clay or Draymond were just like, love playing in this arena. Love it. Like they couldn't wait to be like, man, we love it here. So, yeah, and if you think about it, it is like, obviously 2018, last year, 2019, Game 6 was in Toyota Center. It's like, it is a lot of the great memories for the Warriors and Warriors fans. That's, a lot of them are in the Toyota Center. It is very Yankees-Astros.
And at this point, where they're at the end of it, there's no real get back for the Rockets.
No.
They're not going to, this team.
Last season was the.
That was the one chance. Because the Warriors aren't in a position to be playing meaningful games just in the standings. Even if they do make a playoff push, very unlikely that they would see the Rockets because the Warriors are probably would be the 8th seed or the 7th seed, and the Rockets aren't getting to that spot. So no matter how their era peters out, they will have a clean, undefeated, unblemished record against the Rockets in things that matter, and that's unfortunate. There's no real get back at this point. Not that last night would have been. But it's just another one of the markers that go, you're owned here. If a Warriors fan wanted to name Toyota Center and Wikipedia Chase Center South or the property of the Warriors, while it would get edited and changed pretty quickly, they would be dead on, which sucks.
Yeah, it is one of the, like, there's just no, like, rivalry, like, you know, give and take. You know, it's like.
Yeah, the Rockets are like, the nail, they're the hammer.
Yeah, like Bulls. Knicks in the 90s. I guess even the Knicks, they won in what was that, 94?
Yeah.
Without Jordan.
Jordan was gone, but they obviously got one, yeah.
So if you're a Bulls fan, you're like, good job without
exactly,
Jordan.
Exactly, whatever.
But, yeah, it is just one of those rivalries where, I don't know, in most of the documentaries about, you know, great matchups and NBA past, like, there always is the part of, like, they won that one year. You know, the Pacers got past the Knicks that one time.
They did get them.
And it's like, nope, this just never happened.
It's just not to be.
I mean, there's that one James Harden game in like 2019.
Yeah, and the Chris Paul game 5 before he got hurt, that stuff.
Yeah, no, they won plenty of playoff games. Yeah,
the problem is
they didn't win a series.
The series have been competitive enough for the final game to hurt a hell of a lot. Yes, yeah. It is. They have won they've had their moments, but never a deciding moment. And unfortunately, despite who was on the floor last night,
they could have changed it all.
Just a stark reminder.
Barry Smith made 2 shots.
Maybe one. All we needed was one. Just a stark reminder of what it is and what it has been in regards to that team from Northern California. All right, we'll go to break with that. We will talk some Texans because we talked about it yesterday. They continue to be active, and they did it again. I think we have now found the Kirk Cousins of defensive ends, continuing to find a way to get yourself deal after deal. Is it 3 straight years of this for the first year, then another, then an extension, and then another extension for one Danielle Hunter? We'll talk about that when we come back. But before we go to break, I want to talk about Monument Chevrolet because it is truck month. It has arrived, and that means even more savings from Monument Chevrolet. They're offering that supplier discount on their full inventory of 2026 Silverado 1500s. That means that's a big discount that's usually just reserved for Chevy sellers. Now you get to pay that price this month. So take advantage of Truck Month, the month of March at Monument Chevrolet. And while the Silverado 1500s are the big deal right now, doesn't mean that's the vehicle you want. And if you want a different vehicle, they have those for you too. They have a very nice menu on their website at monumentchevrolet.com that shows you all the vehicles in their lineup, whether it be the Silverado or maybe you want a different truck like the Colorado. They also have SUVs like the Equinox and the Trailblazer, the EV vehicles like the Equinox EV and others, all there for you to check out at Monument Chevrolet. Find the price you want and then go on out there. They're in Pasadena. It's off of Bellway 8 and 225. And ask for Jeff, their GM, their point person. Make sure if you got a question, you get Jeff to answer it for you, and then he'll make sure you get to the right salesperson for you, because those salespeople are kind of your conduit to getting you the vehicle that you've chosen. So from Jeff to the salespeople, they're all there working for you at Monument Chevrolet in Pasadena. Head on out there and get yourself a great vehicle. It's Monument Chevrolet. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
He's a great player, great defensive end, may eventually be a Hall of Famer, but he's an all-time bag getter. Danielle Hunter. And I'm always somewhat confused about how the extension works. What does it mean for this year? How much money is put off till next year? And it all depends on what site you look at. If you missed the news, Danielle Hunter gets a one-year extension that goes over $40 million, $40.1 million, that extra $100K, very important for someone. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's a workout bonus or a roster bonus thrown in. I don't know. But if you go to Danielle Hunter's page on Over the Cap, just to try to figure out what it means, if I do that, and I look at it, from what I can tell, his cap hit, which is for this year, which is most important to the Texans as they try to make space, is low, lower than you would think for a man of his talents. Cap number 16.1 million, which helps them create space over the cap currently has the Texans. And there's also a Jalen Petrie restructure apparently thrown in there. They have nearly $30 million in cap space now for a team who wasn't even compliant a couple days ago. At least that's what I saw if we throw in the Petrie non-confirmed restructure. But if we just go by what's confirmed right now, they're at 22.5. Maybe they'll have 28 by the end of the day. So they weren't even cap compliant. They had to make moves, including the the Stingley one restructure. And now they have the ability to maybe sign a somewhat big ticket free agent offensive lineman. That one of those guys who maybe they would have considered is off the market. Now, is it Tyler? What do we go with this last name? I look at it and go, Biash.
Oh,
what do we do with Tyler?
I definitely learned how to say his name.
I have too, but now when I look at it,
Biadic.
There it is. I had to hear it again. Tyler Biadic was one of those maybe mid price guys you could have gone after, but he's a Charger. That deal came down earlier this morning, about 3 years, $30+ million. He goes to the Chargers. So if they were looking to upgrade at center, it won't be there. Of course, the big name one is Tyler Linderbaum, and he is a guy who's probably going to make 20+, which is likely out of the Texans' price range. But Nick Caserio's working. As John said, he's playing chess while other people are playing football. It's a line that Raheel liked a lot, and you do too. So that was his line of the morning, and we will wait and see. But this is kind of why people think the cap isn't real. It is somewhat credit card spending, depending on the restructure you make.
That's
because you have to eventually deal with it, or you can keep pushing it off. You can be the Saints, who always, when they thought they were competing with even with Derek Carr at quarterback, they would just push stuff off to the side or down the line. But eventually, the bill comes due. Some teams this year are a prime example of that. Particularly when you pay a quarterback that doesn't work out. The Dolphins are one of those teams that, as it stands, aren't cap compliant, and it's because they had a window where they thought they could win a Super Bowl. That's why you give Jalen Ramsey money. You're giving extensions to Tyreek Hill and others. At some point, that becomes an issue you have to deal with, particularly when you're in the middle of rebuilding. So even if you release those guys, you're doing the post-June 1 thing.
Yeah.
The money eventually has to get paid, or at least has to affect your cap, and that's what's happening across the league. The Texans are doing things to maneuver while they still have the rookie quarterback on a modest deal, and those bills will come due because you have star players who are going to get paid. Will Anderson, the less talked about eventual Nico Collins extension. I didn't foresee a Danielle Hunter extension because I just saw one. That's why he's one of the all-time bag getters, because he continues to re-up.
It's like I didn't know this was okay.
I didn't know this was the thing.
I didn't know this was on the table.
I didn't know it was necessary. But he gets another bag.
Set a reminder alert for every March 5th.
Be right around then, and just wonder what's Danielle Hunter up to.
Danielle Hunter contract extension talk.
Yeah, he's on his cap number next year, and I talk about how eventually the bill comes due. As it stands now, it's over $45 million. I imagine there will be another restructure at some point to lower that number in 2027. But what you do know is he'll be around, it looks like, for the next 2 years, and hopefully the production continues. I saw a stat about him. He's one of those guys in college that breaks the trend of very little production on the college level to being a potential Hall of Famer. He just got to double-digit sacks over the course of his college career.
It's something like it's crazy low.
It's crazy low considering what he has.
He probably had more sacks this season than he had in his LSU career.
Yeah.
So, great, fantastic player. I do think.
No, it's not. It's not even.
It's 9.5.
He didn't even get the 5 total sacks in his LSU career.
I was like, in my head, it's either 9 to 12. It's in that range. 5.5 sacks.
He had crazy. His final
first
year.
Career?
His final year, 2014, he had 1.5 sacks. He did have 13 tackles for loss, so he was productive in that final year and 8 the year before. But
yeah. How long are his arms?
Pretty long, I think.
All right.
It is translated to the NFL. Whatever his issues were in college or the scheme, whatever you want to put it on, that has not been a problem in the NFL.
Probably scheme.
You could put 3 games together from this season where he had multi-sack games.
I mean, did he have against the Bills?
Yeah.
It felt like he had 5.5.
He might have. He might have, and he only got the 4.5 and And it wasn't like he was missing time those 3 years. He played a lot. He just wasn't productive.
That's crazy.
As far as sacks are concerned, that has not been a problem here.
That, like, Bartavius Mingo was, like, by far more productive than he. Yes. Like, if you're just watching LSU on those Saturdays, like him and Sam Montgomery.
Yeah.
You're like, those guys are the. That's the guy.
Sam Montgomery, famous for being a Texan.
Texan, yeah.
Washout, and a guy who's. Whose LSU strength coach pretty much ripped them to shreds during the draft process, and the Texans ignored it. Like, you know what? Ah, you don't know nothing.
That LSU draft coach, draft Neil Hunter.
Yeah, you should draft him, not Sam. Sam doesn't work hard. That was the talk coming. I think it was Tommy Moffitt at the time. Yeah. I think he might have been their longtime strength coach. Now he's at A&M, I think.
Yes, because Brian Kelly fired him.
Yeah, and when A&M went back to LSU. He was a star, a personality of that game. Remember when the Aggies are on the top of the college football world? Remember those times?
Crazy.
Short-lived time during the 2025 season. But pay attention to the strength coaches and ignore Danielle Hunter's college production. It clearly meant nothing. Or lack of production.
No.
It clearly meant nothing.
I do. So I kind of can't imagine him and Will Anderson will both
be making
$40 million at the same time.
Well, Will Anderson's cap hit will likely not, you know.
It's until like 28 or.
Yeah, you move the money around. Yeah. You give Will a signing bonus. You keep the cap hit low year one. So there are ways to move. But to your point, that's a lot of money devoted to your two edge rusher. Danielle Hunter is 32. Well, at least he'll be 32 once the season begins. But we know he's a big-time player. He's also just a guy that loves a re-up, and the Texans are more than willing. And I'm sure it helps. It certainly helps them and their number this year. So it's got to work for both sides, and it works for both sides. So the number is guaranteed money is what's always important. He has new money, and the $40-plus million, that's the new guaranteed money that he gets. So credit to Danielle Hunter.
I know. Well, I mean. And I feel like he's one of those. I just brought up his age just as like, just kind of mapping out. I feel like he's kind of like a Calais Campbell type where, I mean, just.
He could just play forever.
Obviously, like getting off the bus, you get it with Danielle Hunter of like, this guy feels like he could play forever.
Yeah.
So, and be effective.
And it's just funny how the numbers for these deals mess with different sites. I told you over the cap has him at about a 16 plus whatever cap hit. SpotTrack has him at 31.3 for this year. So who knows how it all works out. But either way, we know Danielle Hunter gets another bag. He'll be with the Texans. It looks like for 2 years, this upcoming year, and then in 2027. Hopefully him and Will Anderson can be as fierce as they have been the first 2 years for the next 2 years at very expensive rates.
Yeah.
That's what it is. When you've got elite pass rushers, that's how it gets done.
Is Will Anderson like 45? I remember we talked about it earlier, and I think we came down on whatever record he wants to break, whether it's
guaranteed money, most guaranteed, or APY.
Yeah, or most per year. Like, I feel like he's going to break it. And when you just see the like notification that Danielle Hunter at 32 years old is getting 1 year $40 million, you're just like, oh my God, how much is like 25-year-old Will Anderson going to get?
So the most recent long-term deal that broke the bank was Micah Parsons. His annual salary was 46.5. Is that something that Will Anderson is something he could shoot for? The question will be, is it something he will do considering his ties, his want to be here and help the Texans win a Super Bowl, put the bull in the ring, that stuff. Will he work with them? Not to a great degree, but to a point where he doesn't have to be at Micah Parsons' level?
Yeah.
That'll be the question. If it would fit what we have been told about him, where he wouldn't make sure he's the highest paid guy. He'll get a lot of money. It won't be a question of that, but maybe part of the narrative will be Will Anderson understands that team building, blah, blah, blah.
That'll definitely be the like third Rappaport tweet about the deal that gets done is like, this gives flexibility to
that,
the...
Yeah, was Will Anderson looking for that story to be told about him where he gives flexibility? It feels like it fits what people tell us about
it. It's also very funny because I think the first tweet will have, like, record-breaking... Like, the word record-breaking will be
in the... And
then
you'll hear how Will Anderson also worked with the Texans to make sure they could make more moves.
I mean, it's like the Danielle Hunter thing where, whatever, at the halftime of a Rockets game, I'm sitting there being like, so what does this actually mean? Like, the NFL cap being, I don't know, hazy? Not real, but, like, it is very flexible. I was just like, so he signed for a $40 million one-year contract. That, to my brain, feels like it should be a very simple contract to understand.
Yeah, it feels like that, but it isn't. It never is.
Yeah,
NBA contracts, simple.
Yeah, fully guaranteed. Got it. Cool. Sounds good. Even, like, MLB contracts, like, other than the deferred money, I got it.
Yeah.
It all makes sense. This, I'm just like, I'm just waiting until Texans cap posts some sort of graph. That's all I'm waiting for.
So to the player, and fully guaranteed is what matters.
Yeah, signing bonus.
All those things are what matters. What money am I guaranteed to get, and then can I achieve some other things to get the rest of it? For the team, it's the maneuvering. What are they devoting to signing bonus? What are they devoting to roster bonus to make sure, despite the sticker shock of whatever the number is, they can still make moves under the cap.
And for a fan, all I care about
this, you know, Hunter's going to be here.
Or, and just like, what's the like number against the cap? Like the cap is whatever, 200 something million. Like how does this take us closer or farther away from that number? That's all I really like.
And despite all the money discussions, it takes them further away along with the Jalen Petrie restructure.
Sure.
So at some point they'll have to deal with it, but not 2026. It's time to make more moves with the money you've freed up. We'll go to break with that, and we'll hear not from a Texan, but from one Jeremy Pena. In his own words, he'll tell us what happened. He is now officially out of the WBC. I saw him in this interview. I think Brian McTaggart got to him, and he's in his Astro gear. So he was there for a good time, not a long time. Jeremy Pena, no longer a part of the WBC. He can recuperate with the Astros because we know they have a real good history of getting guys back to health as quickly as possible. In some ways, I wish he was still in the DR dealing with their doctors and their trainers, not the Astros. But that's not the case. We'll hear from Jeremy Pena on the injury and his status when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
It's the Del Alalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Alalea.
So the initial reporting on Jeremy Pena was just early, not wrong. We had the gentleman out of the DR tell us that, and it got everywhere, that Jeremy Pena had a fracture in his finger. And then he had to kind of walk it back because Nelson Cruz, the GM for the Dominican team, said, we're still waiting. We need more tests. The first tests were inconclusive. Well, yesterday we found out. We got some certainty. Jeremy Pena does have a fracture in the tip of his finger. So not only will he miss the first round of the World Baseball Classic, he's missing the entire thing. He's back in Astro gear, and he got to talk about his injury. Ask some questions by the media. Here's Jeremy Pena on what it is, how long he'll be out, and is this a major injury?
Jeremy, just what's this last 48 hours been like just with the injury and having to come back here and not play in the WBC?
Tough. I mean, it sucks. I feel like the last 48 hours has been very, you know, uncertain, but it is what it is. You know, it's part of the game. Injuries are part of the game. And, you know, I wish I was out there playing with the guys. We have a great team. Team's ready to go, though. So I'll be rooting, watching the game, and cheering the team on.
What do you know just about the severity of the fracture and kind of what your timeline looks like?
So we don't really have a timeline right now. We are going to reevaluate in 2 weeks. But I don't think it should be bad injury. I think we should be good.
Did you know at the time that when it hit that, I mean, the video looked like you were looking at your finger. Did you think that, you know, there could be an issue, kind of a longer term issue at that point?
I did. You know, once the ball hit my finger, I just thought it was a broken nail. I was like, okay, that's fine. You know, I could play with a broken nail. And then we decided to go check it out, get some imaging done, and, you know, fracture came out. And yeah.
For the next 2 weeks, are you like completely shut down, or are you going to be able to do anything?
I'll be active. I'll join the team, do what I can, do sprints, do my single-handed work, mm-hmm. lift, get strong. You know, use this time to be productive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because when I get back and I could use the handful time, we don't need to ramp up from zero.
Jeremy Pena, as you might imagine, disappointed that he can't represent his country. Some of you, depending on how you feel about the WBC, are like, you know what? He shouldn't have been there in the first place. And that happened for a couple of Astros. Others have been able to take part and have made it through the exhibition season, or at least exhibition part of that tournament, healthy, and they're going to play. We know Shade Whitcomb is playing. There's a couple of other Astros who are involved, but Jeremy Pena back. And are they taking, not directly our advice, but something we've put out there, that, hey, never give a timeline anymore? Or are we concerned that they actually think this could go longer than the 2 weeks? Because you heard him, he says 2 weeks, and then they'll reevaluate. So I guess this is all about how does a broken, or at least a fractured part of your finger heal before we make any real determination about your level, or at least your time away from the team. So I'm gonna lean into that. It's broken. How do his bones heal? And then we'll find out. It doesn't mean he's gonna lose a finger just because the Astros are bad at analyzing injuries.
Yeah, I'll just put in like a, I don't know, opening day or like a week after, just because of Astros injury nonsense, of like reevaluating 2 weeks could turn into whatever, what, 23 days, pretty easily with the Astros, how they do things. So I think he might miss like some games, but I don't think it'll be anything that's like major. If all you care about is regular season Astros baseball, like, you might not even notice.
Yeah, the regular season opens,
it's like the 28th?
March 25th, exclusive Netflix game between the Giants and the Yankees.
Never mind, only 19
games. Yeah, traditional opening day. I guess they're going to do it like the NFL does, where one game will open up the season, and then traditional opening day is the next day with a full slate. So is he back in about 20 days? That's the question. 2 weeks, and then a reevaluation. I'm going to go not available to start the season. I'm just going to take a guess.
Like that next week, but probably.
But
you know, like it's
he's working his way back. Maybe a rehab assignment, and then we're good to go.
Or Astros, they learned a thing or two about injury messaging, and reevaluate in 2 weeks.
Under promise,
might over deliver. I mean, we only need reevaluate in 2 weeks to mean 3 weeks. That's all we really need.
A week, we figure out he's healed, he can play. And what I don't want to hear is he's got a chance to play through it. Just let it completely heal.
God.
I don't want to hear he has to deal with pain maintenance. None of that.
It's all about pain tolerance.
Nope.
You can't.
Don't like it.
You can't make it worse.
Don't like it.
Actually, you can. You can
when there are months upon months and months of baseball.
The next 160 games of baseball.
It can be something where we just allow it to fully heal. Mm-hmm. No pain tolerance type things. Let it heal. Let it be pain-free. And he can come back. And you know what? It kind of fixes your little glut thing you have for a little bit.
The untenable Astros infield.
Yeah, all of a sudden tenable.
A little more tenable now. Yeah.
So we've moved from, you know what? WBC, a good thing. It injured an Astro and allowed the other guys to play.
Killed all the Astros. Yeah.
Well, WBC. Not all of them.
Christian Walker, you can stay. I think USA's good.
No, I didn't mean that. I just meant if you send them all there, how many guys get hurt?
We only need
I'm not talking about performance stuff on the rosters. That's what I just meant. Hey, one guy is enough.
Yeah.
It fixes what potentially was a problem.
The glut.
Yeah.
If he has no, you know,
for a week, everything's fixed.
If
to start the regular season.
If one injury takes a glut, takes your roster from having a glut to the appropriate number of starters. Not sure if you had a glut to start with. I'm not sure.
That has kind of been our point. Where are we sure there's actually a thing? I think beyond too many good players, it's more about, are these guys going to be, as someone would say, good soldiers about it? Or is everyone just going to be fine with how things are going to have to be maneuvered to get all these guys at bats.
And, oh my God, that outfield. I think that's also part of it. It's like, can one of these guys, can we just flip one of these guys to an outfielder? Just so.
That feels like, it probably feels a little easier to me considering they did that to Altuve and he was so willing to try it. We generally don't associate this with baseball players unless your name is Rafael Devers. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't play that position. Yeah, it's not something we think about. Like, I think it's more associated with basketball players or a football recruit where this is my spot, this is where I'm going to play. But as far as baseball, we don't really think about, oh, this guy's refusing to go play there. Is there some of that? Jordan would actually like to play left field. They don't want him to. Mm-hmm. Is Paredes someone who's just like, hey, just throw me out there? I'm good. Well, I don't know that. Maybe he's the guy who goes, but he won't do it. I play third, or I play
first
this,
or second.
But I don't play left. Maybe he doesn't want to be out there.
Maybe not. I even like if he could just trade, Paredes because he's the most available or most available with the market. Walker, I think, also available, but.
Not
less
the market.
Of a market.
He's the Kuminga of the Astros.
Yeah, if you could get the Paredes of the outfield, if you could just flip him for that, like, sure. I'm not sure which team is. Look, you almost need a team that has too many outfielders and needs a third baseman. You know, at this point, and not even this point, 3 weeks ago, at that point, I think you're better off just rolling into the season, waiting for a contender to have a guy get hurt. Boom.
Turns out there
creates a market.
You're the sort of contender who had a guy get hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now you have
Look
an
at
answer.
Look at that. Hey.
Things just work out.
You don't even have to trade them.
Yeah. Things just happen to work out. Not for Jeremy Peña so much, but.
No. Or Team DR.
No, that didn't help. But that's not our primary concern. Hopefully he gets back healthy after the two week absence, reevaluation. And maybe he misses time or maybe he doesn't. We'll see. We still have some weeks to go before the regular season begins. We're done with hour one. We'll come back with Michael Caro at 11:30. So if you got questions about movies or television, we can answer them for you. Then he'll also give you his recs for the week. The host of Comicast joins us at 11:30. You should join us too, either then or before then. 713-780-3776 is the number. Jeremy Peña hurt. Texans making cap space moves, and the Rockets doing what they do when the Warriors are anywhere near them. Generally disappointing. So that's the hour one wrap up. We'll get into more things in hour two when we get back.
ESPN 97.5.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.